But when there's something I don't understand from somebody, I ask them, why do you think that way? Why is, what train of logic led you to that conclusion? Because then maybe, just maybe, I can understand, instead of being offended and automatically being on the, I'm offended, I'm on the offense. Instead of that, maybe I can try to say, hey, why do you believe that? Let me just ask you more questions about where you're coming from on that. It's like what you do for your entire job here, Paul.
What does it mean to be conservative? Are there any young conservatives out there? And was Donald Trump actually a good guy? Perhaps my guest today, Kevin Fares, would like to share his answers. Kevin is the host of the show Speechless on Cities 92.9. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. You know, I mean, like we've gotten a pretty good friendship, I'd say, building here. And I really do appreciate being able to come on. You've had a lot of my good friends at Cities 92.9 on, and I'm really proud to be able to say I will now be on the Paul Garcia show.
Oh, my man.
I'm so excited.
You are too kind. I was just on your show a second ago. It was a great time. I've learned a lot from you. You're very smart. You're very articulate. You're very conservative. And on this show, you know, I've had people from the left and on the right on my show, and we've talked, and it's been great conversations. I agree with some points on both sides of the aisle, actually. People know that I kind of lean conservative for sure, but across different issues, it varies. I want to ask you, and also I should tell the people, how old are you?
I'm 21.
21 years old. Wow, you're destined for really great things because, as I said, you're very intelligent. You're very articulate. You know what you're doing when it comes to radio, when it comes to speaking. You've spoken at many events, and you've done so very well. All that said, enough flattery. Tell us, what does it mean to be a conservative in your mind?
That's a big question, Paul, because I think it can mean different things to different people. I mean, at a very base level, I think that there's the issues that really bind every conservative together, and that's usually limited government and being for allowing yourself to keep more of the money you earn. So those kind of go hand in hand because you got limited government, meaning there's less government in your life. And if there's going to be less government, it doesn't need as much funding, so then we can lower our taxation. And that's pretty much what can bind every conservative, bring every conservative together. Most of the time, you usually have support for the police and law and order because we want to be able to protect the things that we've worked so hard to build. But then there's also the issues that kind of can be more contended in the conservative realm. I mean, gay marriage is one that's still kind of debated among conservatives. I know it seems somewhat settled by society somewhat. I mean, now there's all this talk regarding the right to privacy and what if Obergefell could actually be overturned. That's a debate to be had, but gay marriage is one that a lot of conservatives can still fight on a bit. Abortion, most are somewhat – are mainly pro-life, but there's still kind of some of those questions is should there be exceptions? At what point should an abortion exception be? So what does it mean to be conservative? What it really means is to be pro-America at the end of the day. Because there are all these issues and there are the few that combined everyone, but not all conservatives are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's about perspective, really. I mean, when you go into a paint shop, Paul, you could ask for red. Let's say red means conservative, red means Republican, whatever. There's going to be a bunch of different shades of red that they're going to show you. Saying red is way too overgeneralized. And that's what we often do in politics a lot because people want to work when there's a vast – I mean, we have 300 million people in this country. So it's easier to work in trying to overgeneralize people. Oh, you're a liberal. You're a conservative. But being a conservative isn't just like one set of beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a line. I mean, like, yeah, if you're going to say that we need to – tax everybody at 50-60% of their income, yeah, you're probably not a conservative. I can say that. But it's not as simple as saying this is what a conservative is. I think that the easiest way, if you want that kind of answer, a conservative is pro-America.
Mm-hmm. When you really start to break down the words liberal and conservative and look at them from an etymology standpoint, conservative is conservative,
mm-hmm.
conservative. You hold on to more rights as people. You want more things to be your decision to make. You just want to hold on to even the things that we've done in history. You're more reluctant to make radical change, whereas liberal, you look on the back of a lotion bottle, it says apply liberally. More mm-hmm. than enough, that's what I always say.
Yeah.
It's daring to leap into the unknown much quicker than a typical conservative. These are general ways of thinking, it seems. Conserve or liberally dare to jump out into the unknown type of a thing. Make change. So it's change, hold on. Those seem to be the two ends of the spectrum. How much do you want to hold on and keep things kind of the same way and hold on to these fundamental rights? And how much do you want to progress? Are you willing to go where no man's gone before and see what happens, because it's never been done, so you don't really know?
Exactly. And I think the thing that kind of comes with that is oftentimes the question I'm asked by, and these are the questions I love when I get this from somebody who is more liberal. I have a lot of conversations. I go to Illinois State. I'm the president of our Turning Point USA. Turning Point USA is a great youth conservative organization. I'm the president of that chapter at ISU. And a lot of what we do is we go out on campus and just start conversations. Like, we have tables set up that might have signs that say things like socialism sucks or be pro-America, things like that. And just to start a conversation about what we believe. And so I've had people that are like, so what are you trying to conserve when you say you're a conservative? That's the question people often ask. And that's the one when I first got it really stumped me. And even to this day, it's like, huh, what are we trying to conserve as conservatives? Well, a traditional American value system. You work for what you have. You earn what you work for. Nobody else is entitled to what you have. Things like that. That's what we're trying to conserve, that kind of America, because oftentimes it can get twisted. It can get twisted to where we're pushed as, oh, well, they're racist because a former time in America, white people had all these other rights that other people did not. I mean, that's why we had to pass like the Civil Rights Act and things
like
that.
Under that umbrella term of conservative, you risk people believing that you're also trying to conserve the racist past
exactly,
of America. And it's
exactly.
Just not the case.
No, oftentimes what we want to do is we want to confront it, say, yeah, this happened, but look how far we have come as a society. Because in reality, what we're trying to conserve, when you hear conservative slogans like make America great again, and what's being attempted to conserve is the founding documents. And things like the Civil Rights Acts were ways for America to make up for the ways that we were not conserving the founding documents. I mean, in our founding documents, it says all men are created equal. All men are created equal. Well, they tried to not – when I say they, it's kind of overgeneralized, but people back in times when slavery was acceptable tried to say, well, slaves are not men. They are property. Well, and then we came far as a society to say, well, that's not true. These are people. Doesn't matter your skin color. They are people. And so we need to treat them because all men are created equal. That's what we're trying to conserve as conservatives. It's the founding documents and the principles laid out in them.
So it was originally, correct me if I'm wrong, the Democrats that wanted to keep slavery and the Republicans that wanted to abolish it. Is that correct?
Yeah. The first Republican is considered to be Abraham Lincoln.
Right. Okay. When was there a switcheroo? I've heard of this thing called the Big Switch. Why does it seem like people try to paint the Republicans and the right as the more racist ones and the left as the more tolerant, less racist ones?
Yeah, so that's kind of – I consider the switch to be – the big party switch to be kind of a lie. It's based on this idea, this thought that President Nixon did this thing when he was running his campaign called the Southern Strategy because there was a rumor being told that people in the South were more racist than people in the North. And so the idea was to try to peddle votes in – just try to peddle more votes for the party of the Republicans was that Nixon would run a more racially insensitive campaign to win. He ended up winning that election. It's really iffy on the statistics to actually, because you can't really like say like, oh, well, it's the racism that got him this amount of votes, or like it's this message that got him. It's not really easy to like quantify that, along with the fact that if you look at like Bill Clinton, who won in the 90s, Bill Clinton won a significant portion of the southern states. So to say that the party switched in the 60s due to the Southern Strategy is just false, because Jimmy Carter won some southern states too. Then you had Clinton, who won a significant portion of them. Obama won several as well. So to try to rely on the idea that, oh, well, it's because the South's racist and they got the Republicans from that is just false. If anything, the party switch that I saw is the switch from the Democrats being racist towards anybody who's not white. I mean, the KKK was started by as a form of the Democratic Party. A part of the Democratic Party is tangentially. But then now we have a Democratic Party that is racist to pretty much everybody else, or people that don't align with, I mean, if we just, we heard on my show earlier, Eduardo, my good friend Eduardo Monk Jr., who is from a very Mexican background, gets called a race traitor because he identifies as a conservative. So I don't, if a white guy wanted to be a Democrat, because we're always labeled, Republicans are always labeled as, oh, well, it's just straight white men are Republicans. If a straight white guy wanted to be a Democrat, I wouldn't think he was trading away part of his or betraying his identity. No, I think that he has his own personal beliefs and his own view system that has led him to that.
That sounds like something that a group that wants to indoctrinate you would say. How dare you go against the party values?
Exactly.
What's wrong with you? You traitor.
Yep.
Especially saying something like traitor because you are believing something that your race doesn't believe. It's really weird identity politics when you get down to it.
No, 100%.
Let people think. And instead of name calling, once you resort to name calling, you sound like an idiot. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. Let's just exchange ideas. If you're right, talk to me and you'll prove it. I personally try to have made it a habit to, and honestly, I get a thrill out of being proven wrong. It's great because mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, I learned something new that I have been so sure of the untrue version of that for so long. Now, what's going to happen in my life now that I have this newfound information, this beautiful thing? That's really strange, though, hearing that was a response to Eduardo being a Mexican and being conservative. Do you think racism is as prevalent today as it was 50 years ago?
God, no. God, no.
The tractor cab is the mission control of the entire farming operation. Worn out and outdated tractor cabs lead to annoying discomfort, hindered productivity, dangerous sound levels, and lower resale value. This is why you need to revive your tractor cab with Fair Cab Interiors. Today, we use our vast facility in the cornfields of Illinois to manufacture high-quality custom tractor upholstery for over 750 models from the 1960s all the way through to the 2010s. Our team of product engineers carefully design each new part, emphasizing product fit and ease of installation for anyone to install. We offer acoustical foam panels, ProForm plastic panels, headliners, floor mats, door and window seals, seats, and much more. We carefully monitor lamination quality, use premium grade foam, and utilize the highest standards of raw materials when manufacturing. With our massive inventory and delivery trucks that pick up daily, logistics are a snap. Our call center is manned not by robot answering machines, but real, experienced, and knowledgeable people who will provide you with installation tips, product details, and help with any questions you may have before or after the sale. But don't just take our word for all this. See what people are saying on faircab.com and Google reviews, where we've earned over 2,000 five-star reviews.
When the time comes to fix up your aging tractor interior, try out the cab interior experts at Fair Cab. Visit us at faircab.com or give us a call at 815-692-3355.
Not at all. I think that, I mean, because you'll even hear conservatives push like this reverse racism thing, like, oh, well, they're racist towards white people. And I think that there are ways that people are racist towards white people. And I see it a lot from liberals and leftists. I mean, I've heard people say, I hate white people. And I'm like, that's awful.
That's messed up.
Yeah, it's messed up when you really get down to it. Like oftentimes it's said as a passing comment, which is like really sad. Because it's like, oh, well, that's just a white people thing. I hate how white people do that. And I've heard it from people. I even heard that. I've heard white people say that.
If I said I hate black people, dude, if this were on the radio, I'd be in big
trouble. Bro, I'm telling you, Paul. I was considering in my head, I was like,
Should I say that?
I can't even say it as an example.
This is pirate radio, man.
I can't. That's true. I can't even say it as an example, though, because somebody takes that sound bit and, oh, they post it everywhere. Oh, Kevin Ferris, the crazy conservative from Illinois State.
Do it.
He said it.
Yeah.
But that's what would happen. And so do I think racism is prevalent? That's the question you asked. No, because at one point in our society, it was acceptable to deny somebody service at your business based on the color of their skin. It was acceptable in our society to back in the day, if your daughter came home with a man that was of a different race, it was looked down upon. And there's still some of that.
Let me tell you
one
funny
story. It's not just in white culture either. Like I've heard stories. I saw it on The Bachelor, actually. I know that's displaying myself to everybody saying that I've watched The Bachelor. But there was a black contestant on The Bachelor who brought home a white guy. and her dad was very concerned at first. Mm-hmm. Like it happens like that, but nowadays it's kind of like, oh, why is that like a big deal? You go back 20 years ago, even like right around the time I was born. Back then it was more like, yeah, why would you want your daughter?
My dad, when he was pursuing my mom in high school, tried to take her on a date and he came to her front door. My grandpa came and said, well, he opened the door, closed the door. And then his daughter, who was going to, my dad wanted to take out on a date, said, my dad said, I can't hang out with you because you're Mexican. And that happened. And then they got married later on, though.
Yeah.
And he apologized before they got married, of course, you know, when they're 30 years old. But I don't know what the lesson is there. One, people change their mind. And yes, that was a way of thinking back in the day, especially previous generations. It was just a way of thinking. I don't know what you want to do about that. That's how it goes. We look at history's past. Back in the day, there was weird stuff going on when the Bible was being written. You change. It was just the way of the land at the time.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing that I think that's the thing that the left never gets. Is
so
that,
you want to conserve that? Is that right?
No. I think the thing that the left never gets, Paul, is the idea that people and things can change. They want to change everything, but they never want to accept that people can change. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that somebody makes a passing comment that seems as inappropriate or rude or it can be even perceived as potentially racist. They're canceled. They're out of here. They tried to do it to like Morgan Wallen. I'm a big music fan. This is an Elton John shirt for anybody out there. I'm a big music fan, all kind of music. I just saw Elton John last night. Phenomenal concert. But I'm a big music fan. And Morgan Wallen, who is like the arguably number one in country radio right now, either Morgan Wallen or Luke Combs. Morgan Wallen was caught on video saying the N-word to some buddies. And yeah, I don't agree with saying that word. I think it's a bad word. I think the historical connotations of it. I think it's a bad word. I have an issue when rappers say it, whether you're white or black, anything. I have an issue with when pretty much anyone says it. I think it's inappropriate. But he said it drunk to some buddies. He wasn't going out telling black people that, like yelling it at people, using it in an incredibly racist or offensive way. And yet the left tried to cancel him for that. They tried to boycott him. And then here's the thing. He started selling more concerts. And it wasn't because all of his, like, selling out more venues and everything. And it wasn't because all of his fans are these racist country bumpkins or anything. No, it's because they're like, he's talented. And if you actually watch it, it was like some neighbor that was filming him when he was like, drunk with some buddies and said something stupid. If I had a dollar for every time myself or one of my friends said something stupid when we'd had a few to drink, I'd have at least $100. Like, that's just like, when you're with your buddies, like when you're with your buddies, you don't always say the things, you say the things that you're comfortable with each other.
And you say, part of the fun is saying daring things that you shouldn't say. I mean, I'll go on record saying this and gosh, hopefully I'll be my own employer for the rest of my life. But no, I've been around buddies. I'm going to say this. And we've been drinking, and I've pulled out my 23andMe, my DNA results, and it says I'm 3% sub-Saharan African.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what that means?
Yeah.
I can say it. And I said it with the A at the end. I said the N-word with the A at the end.
And again, and like that's with your friends. Like, the thing is that you can't make any mistakes nowadays, Paul. I think it's a really important quote, is the idea that they want to change everything but can't accept that people can change. Because if somebody actually does something, like, what about, we saw those Karen videos, right? Of like those random white women that would, like there was one where she was like walking her dog, or like there's a black guy walking his dog and she like yelled at him that the dog needed to be on a leash and that went crazy over it. I'm not saying she's necessarily a good person. I don't know her. But with the spread of that information on the internet, with the spread of that 30-second, minute-long clip, everybody was so quick to label that woman. Was so quick to label that woman as an awful, racist, terrible person. She might be. I'm not going to lie. She might be, Paul. But that was a minute into the life of an at least 30-year-old woman. A minute. Out of the thousands, hundreds of thousands of minutes she's had in her life. And we're so quick to make it so that she can't get a job. So that she's got to be shunned by society. And again, I'm not defending this woman. I don't know. That's the point I'm trying to make, is I don't know what happens the rest of her life. I don't know. Maybe she had an off day that day. Maybe there was something that happened. No, the cancel culture is prevalent. And we see it. And we see some people being able to be made or get out of it, like Morgan Wallen and Dave Chappelle being another one. Mm-hmm. There are people that can get out of it. But when it's your average person who has a fleeting mistake, they don't have the money or power or influence to actually make like to get out of it like your bigger names do.
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's even a money issue because Joe Rogan got out of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to be said about when you do apologize, you lose some fans that had respect for your integrity, and they're just like, wow, he's kind of a wuss now. So yeah. He's one of those guys. And then the people that were trolling against you never really listened to you in the first place. None mm-hmm. of your fans are turning on you for the most part.
Yeah. And
he said that, like Joe Rogan, they've listened to 1,000 of his podcasts. People have listened to thousands of Morgan Wallen's songs. He doesn't have thousands of songs, probably. But when you apologize, you look like a wimp, you lose some of your loyal fans, and then you don't, those people that were trolling you weren't your fans in the beginning, and so you just go down. I think there's some toxicity, some corrosive element to apologizing to the woke mob. I hate to say that, I can't believe I said that.
that's a me term, Paul.
Yeah, that's one of your terms.
That's one of my terms, the woke mob. But no, I get what you're saying, and I think it depends. Because if you're a person that felt like you did something wrong, apologize.
That's absolutely right.
There's a lot of times where I say something on my show, in debate, in conversation, and I've had people, this has happened in a conversation, and somebody, and I said something, I don't even remember what it was, but somebody was like, well, that offends me. And at first I was like, okay, like, and? You're going to hear things you don't offend, just so you know. They're going to hear things that offend you. Like, that's just kind of how the world works. There's going to be people that disagree with you, and there's going to be people that say something that might rub you a little bit the wrong way. But that's how you learn, if anything. And so they were like, I can't keep with this conversation if you're going to be offensive. And so the way I did it, because I did not feel bad for anything that I said. If I ever feel bad for something that I say or do, I will apologize for it. But I didn't feel bad, so I said, I'm sorry I made you feel that way. Because the thing is I never mean to hurt anybody.
Hmm.
I never want anybody to be hurt. I can't necessarily control it because I don't know what's going to offend somebody.
Hmm.
And I know opinions that I do have do offend people sometimes. I never mean. But if they ask me, if instead of saying that offended me and instead asked me, why do you believe that? Why do you think the way you think? That's oftentimes what I ask people. When there's something I don't understand from somebody, I ask them, why do you think that way? Why is what train of logic led you to that conclusion? Because then maybe, just maybe, I can understand instead of being offended and automatically being on the I'm offended. I'm on the offense. Instead of that, maybe I can try to say, hey, why do you believe that? Let me just ask you more questions about where you're coming from on that. It's like what you do for your entire job here, Paul, trying to understand why people think the way they think. Because then it kind of humanizes the person a bit more. I had a conversation with one person one time. I was arguing with them, not even arguing, it was a discussion about universal healthcare. And I'm not a proponent of universal healthcare. I think we need to significantly privatize the healthcare system. We can get into that at some point if you'd like.
Sure.
But he was telling me about how he had a family member who had did not come from a very affluent area. They were not a very affluent family. And he had a family member who had a serious health condition. I believe it was some kind of cancer. And due to government programs, their family member was able to get cured of that cancer. And when I heard that story, I was like, you know, I have responses on ways to that I think that a private industry could make treatments for even the most severe illnesses such as cancer. I think a private industry could solve that issue. But based on their perspective and where they gain that perspective on government-funded healthcare in some way, I don't think a conversation on the quad at ISU is going to be able to change their mind because they have such an emotional attachment to that issue.
And then you start pecking at their philosophy mm-hmm. that because it has holes in it and then they cry, they lash out maybe, they mm-hmm. get angry because, hey, not only does this make sense to me logically, but I am married to this idea.
Yeah, because
and you're trying to divorce
because that saved someone's life. And I still think I have my own research and ideas on why a private industry could do it. But to them, the life they know, their family member's life was saved by government-supported healthcare. And I'm not going to say when I say I dislike government supported healthcare, it's from a much broader, like for them, they have a very personal connection to that. My beliefs come from a much broader and economic standpoint of why I think that a private industry could do better. I'm not going to be able to connect with that personally if I start throwing out statistics and facts and everything, because when their connection to the issue is personal, I don't want to say logical, because they came to a logical conclusion, but a fact-based argument isn't going to be able to hit as well and change their mind as much as an emotional one will.
Mm-hmm. Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury is my favorite grocery store, not just in Central Illinois, but in the world. And for good reason. They have the most incredible customer service, friendly carryout workers, an exquisite and affordable bakery where fresh baked goods are prepared daily, and a deli market that is truly top-notch, that provides plenty of seating, delicious food, and even free coffee, if you can believe that. And their canned meats are out of this world. This is all just the tip of the iceberg, though. So if you haven't been here, you are really missing out. Come check out Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury, Illinois, where they've been wowing the customer for 72 years. Let's talk about healthcare a little bit. I'm no expert on this, but I know that plenty of people come from Canada when they need serious surgeries that they don't believe are that important in Canada, because Canada has government-ran healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come down to America because America, they don't have to wait. They do a better job, et cetera, et cetera. What is, first of all, the current healthcare environment in America? Is it if you fall below a certain income threshold, you qualify for government-subsidized healthcare and they pay for your cancer treatment? Or is that not the case? And then you also have the option of going to someone like Health Alliance and paying a monthly premium for continued healthcare for you and your family?
Yeah, it's somewhere along those lines, Paul. From my understanding, because I'm still a college kid, so I only have an understanding to the point of where I do my best to debate it, and I'm always open to hearing if somebody has more information than I do, much like you operate. But whenever I talk about the healthcare issue, is I see it as America. We incentivize doctors. We have because yes, there are some government provided opportunities that were provided from Obama's Obamacare, which was also the Affordable Care Act (ACA). There are government options. But we also have a lot of people receive their insurance from their employer for paying for their treatments, their physicals, their pills that they might have, prescriptions. And so because a lot of it comes from more of a private industry of insurance, somewhat of insurance and directly between patient and doctor, we incentivize the doctors because things that a more skilled doctor will get paid more than a less skilled doctor, essentially. If you have continuously proven that you are good at performing a certain type of surgery, or if there's less doctors that can perform a certain type of surgery, you deserve to be paid more for that surgery because there's less people you can go to for it. As a place like Canada, or a place where there's a universal healthcare system, it's basically the government sets the price. The government says, oh, you're doing open heart surgery? This is what you're getting paid for it, because the government is the one paying for it. They pull in all the money from taxpayers and say, this is how it's going. What I think we need to do is try to take the government out and also take a little bit of power away from insurance companies a bit, because if you were able to go shop around, because right now you've probably heard this maybe, Paul, if you go into a doctor's office, if it's a new doctor or something, maybe dentists, any type of healthcare, they'll be like, what insurance do you have? Because I got to check to make sure that your insurance will cover whatever procedure or anything you're doing there. I think if we were able to try to cut that out, where you're able to go shop for medicine and shop for treatment the same way that you'd shop for groceries, I think it'd make it so that you could, if anything, you could budget for any healthcare emergencies or just even healthcare that you have. You would be able to. It would likely lower costs. Because then you don't have the middleman of having to pay insurance. Mm-hmm. You're able to, again, shop for it yourself. If you are going for a routine checkup and you don't feel you need a top-tier doctor for that routine checkup, you could pay for somebody who's right out of medical school or has less experience, something like that. It would make it so that it's directly between your patient and the doctor. And there's not all this other interference in there.
Okay, so it would be a lot like finding a plumber.
Yeah. It'd be like a service industry, But right now, again, there's so many middlemen, whether that's the government or insurance companies. Why can't it just be doctor to – that'd be the question I have. And I'm not even asking that rhetorically. I'm asking if anybody's watching this right now, if you're watching this right now and you know why
it can't just be – leave it in the comments. Leave your answer in the comments.
Tell me why. Why can't it just be me with my doctor? Why does it have – payment-wise. Why can't it just be, hey, I think you did a good job? And or even – it could even be, why can't a doctor – do negotiative pricing? Why can't they do that? If a client feels like they should get a certain procedure for a certain price, they've shopped around a lot, why can't they say, this is what I feel I would pay for this procedure? I know there's obviously there's certain instances where there's emergency, life-saving. Obviously, you can't negotiate for that. But why can't, if it's something that you can take a little bit of time on, why can't you negotiate with a few different doctors and figure it out? Mm-hmm. It's because of insurance.
It's an interesting subject. I'm obviously no expert on it, mm-hmm. though, so I can't give too much of my opinion here and still feel good about it. I do want to ask, though, what do you think about if someone doesn't make enough money? People in the inner cities,
mm-hmm.
average income, I don't know, $20,000. They have government subsidies coming in like crazy. If they fall below the poverty line and someone breaks a leg, typically a leg surgery or whatever to repair that will be $12,000, although that varies from hospital to hospital. I didn't actually realize that, mm-hmm. but it varies from hospital to hospital. It can be $20,000 here, $5,000 here. Do you think if they cannot pay that, should the government come in and pay for it, basically, because they fall below the poverty line and they feel bad enough for them?
I think that there's always a need for some type of social safety nets. I think there is a need. I think that right now, significantly, social safety nets are overused and oftentimes taken advantage of.
Yeah, and that's a socialist type of idea, social safety net. So we do tinker a little bit. We do linger into a little bit of a socialistic republic.
Yeah, well, the United States. I could see where you get that. I mean, you could make that argument for anything, though. I mean, like, I think that a lot – when it comes to socialism, my issue with socialism is that it stems from a federal government. That's where my issue with socialism primarily lies, because I don't want the federal government, who is the most detached from the average citizen, any more power over my money. What I am not necessarily against, even as a conservative, is localities trying out different type of more quote-unquote socialist ideas. Socialism as a system originates from the federal government, from Keynes, Leonard Keynes, the economist. It originates much more from your nationalistic standpoint, nation standpoint.
It's a federally implemented socioeconomic system.
Yes, but if we were to do these programs from a more localized level, I mean, we do already, Paul. That's how our police act. That's how our fire departments act. That's how our schools, our public schools act, for the most part. They originate from the locality. And I don't necessarily have as much of an issue with that, because those are the people that are invested in my life.
That's right. So here in Normal, you know, the people of Normal's tax dollars, they agree in living in Normal to certain tax rates and their taxes going towards different programs, such as the fire department, such as the police stations, police officers, the public schools here in Normal, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. So if we were to do a healthcare system where if we wanted to pool our money together and say, okay, town of Normal, we're going to have this healthcare system, because the thing is, too, is that if we have good doctors in the town of Normal, we're going to agree to put more money towards our medical or whatever that – however we were to set that up. We'd agree to pay more money towards that because we think our doctors are doing a good job. The thing is, though, is when it originates from the national level, you could have the best doctor getting paid the same amount for the same service as the worst doctor. That's what I have usually an issue with a lot of times in teaching. Teachers' unions and the such is that you have great teachers – that are getting paid the same as a below average teacher because unions make it so that you can only make so much. That's a whole nother topic, I know, but I just segued into that because it's the same idea as unions when it comes from the federal level, is you don't have people being able to advocate for themselves. At a local level, you have much more of an ability to advocate for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. And what you're talking about is smaller mm-hmm. government. And then suddenly, if this were the case, if the local people, the local communities, the city of Normal were to determine these to utilize socialistic ideologies and or implement them, I should mm-hmm. say, and start to pay the doctors in the area more, teachers more, as much as they would decide, then suddenly the job of the normal, the county board would mm-hmm. become very, very important. And maybe it'd make more sense to do it by county.
Yeah.
So the county board who determines where our taxes go, roughly speaking, and where all the money in the county goes, their job would be much more important and people would be much more invested because they want to determine and want to have a say in where their taxes go.
Exactly.
And they could go more places and have a more profound impact. It's really interesting hearing this.
And so I'd want to see how it works with other towns. Honestly, I wouldn't want my town to be the test baby or the guinea pig.
Socialism would
I wouldn't necessarily want mine to be the test because I would want to see how somebody else does it first, really, because I think there'd be a lot of kinks to work out. I don't even know what they are. It's all learned in practice.
Right.
I'd be interested if somebody brought up that proposition to implement a way or show exactly where dollars. That's the other thing too, though, that would come with it, Paul, is that you'd need to have a significantly transparent government,
right?
Because the minute that you start giving more of your money to a body to do something for you, the minute corruption
right.
starts to breed itself a little bit.
Well,
more.
It seems to me in this idea that we're painting that there wouldn't be this risk of having absolute power because, as you mm-hmm. know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yep.
If the federal government is becoming corrupt because they have absolute power mm-hmm. and they're starting to implement socialism, no doubt it's going to go awry because people can't leave the country that easy.
Yeah.
However, at the county level, it's so small, people actually can leave relatively mm-hmm. easily. And also, you're not stuck in an ivory tower if you're a local politician. You're walking the streets with these people.
You're using the same businesses. You might own one of them. Like,
right.
oftentimes, people on the county board, that's not their full-time job. So, mm-hmm. like, you're right. And you have to be accountable to your constituents.
Right. And if there's term limits as well, so people can't stay in this position for 20 years and they're not incentivized to do whatever they need to take money from donors to stay in and blah, 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 blah. I think term limits are one of the reasons that the United States is becoming a bit corrupt, especially at the congressional level.
Mm-hmm.
If there's term limits and these people are forced to, who are making all these law decisions, these financial decisions for the community, have to walk and rub shoulders with the people who are affected by these things, it will keep them from becoming too corrupt and too terrible
yeah.
because you're going to have to face the people. You're going to have to go to dinner and be with these people in the same restaurant.
Exactly.
It's
and
interesting.
So, and so that's – so I kind of guess I fall on two sides of the coin of it a little bit. Yes, I think privatization would be a very interesting concept, and I'd love to see that. I also know I do not want – and the reason I say privatization is because I it's the opposite of what is pushed of we universally have government-controlled healthcare. And so I'm like, I think if that's what they see as the right answer, I have a lot of evidence to show that that's not. And so I think moving towards more private could allow people to shop around more. But I wouldn't be opposed to having it to trying stuff out at a local level because, again, it's the investment. You're going to be more invested in where you live than somewhere else. And that's I see that across the board. I see that as kind of a funny thing is that there are things that I agree with more liberals on when it's applied at a much smaller scale.
Mm-hmm. It's when it is applied at the big scale that you just
exactly.
run
and I think
risks.
I actually think that's probably the biggest difference between conservatives and liberals, overgeneralizing, of course. But I think it's the fact that I want power to go from the bottom up, as they want it to go from the top down. I want it to start at your city councils and county boards having pretty much the most concentrated power, your statewide having okay amounts, and then the federal having the least by far.
Hmm. Okay.
Over what happens in an individual's life. Because obviously they're going to have – your federal government has to have a decent amount of power when it comes to like foreign policy or advancing a national military. Totally understandable because those are things that need to kind of have a broad scale brush on them. But if you're affecting the lives of me personally, the only people that I want having votes or any say on that would be myself and the people that live in the same area that I do. Another example would be like the minimum wage. Everybody wants to raise the minimum. Well, not everybody, but a lot of liberals want to raise the national minimum wage to $15 an hour. I think that is an awful idea. I think that the national federal minimum wage should be $0 because the, because what goes on in DC, you cannot make legislation for the economy of the entire nation that affects so locally, because the cost of living in New York City is a lot more than the cost of living in Emmington, Illinois, or Varna, Illinois, small towns that maybe some of your listeners have heard of. But that's the thing, is that New York versus those small towns are very different in terms of cost of living. And so trying to make a national minimum wage is not going to be beneficial to the person earning that wage, nor the people that have to pay it. Mm-hmm. Because your small business in Varna is not going to be able to keep up with a $15, $20, $25 minimum wage. New York City might be a bit different. They might be able to keep up with that. So your locality should I do think there should be minimum wages to an extent, but it shouldn't originate from our federal government.
Right. I agree.
Fairbury Furniture is Central Illinois' premier furniture store. This family-owned business offers a vast selection of premium furniture items from all of your favorite brands, including Sealy, Best Home Furnishings, Leather Italia, Tempur-Pedic, and Ashley, just to name a few. And right next door to their gorgeous 7,000-square-foot furniture showroom, you will find the Fairbury Furniture Mattress Store, home to all of the latest and greatest mattresses in any and all sizes. Also inside Fairbury Furniture is the popular WC Market, a beloved shop that offers an ever-changing selection of unique gifts and fashionable home decor. So make your home interior beautiful, comfortable, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
Come on down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
To impose that at the federal level for absolutely everybody is to disregard the uniquenesses from county to county, from mm-hmm. city to city. It's irresponsible. It's out of touch. And it could only be implemented by people who are truly out of touch with the people, which the people in Congress certainly are.
100%. Mm-hmm. And in our executive branch. And I'd say most people in the federal government, unless you were just recently elected, are in some way out of touch, because there's so much of a treating politicians that are elected to those high offices as if they are it's kind of our fault to an extent. We treat a lot of them as if they are above us already. So of course they're going to treat us like they're above us, like they're better than us, because that's how, I mean, there's the way you see people talking. I mean, the right does it too. They see Trump like a god. Many, not all, but there's many that see him like as if he's the
a prophet
or something like that.
That's
I think he's a really impressive guy. Mm-hmm. And I think there's that a lot of good stuff that he did. But he is not the second coming. I mean, the left does the same thing with people like AOC or I mean, even this isn't a politician, but it was what was considered a martyr, George Floyd. Like people like they make their symbols, and like I saw pictures of George Floyd with a halo around
his
head.
That's so stupid.
And I think it's
absurd.
He
was not a good man.
Well, that and it's just also absurd to put people that are really that are just political pawns, pundits, whatever, as if they're something bigger. Like, no, we are all people. We're all sinners. Mm-hmm. We're all in the same playing field, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. We kind of have a habit of making people these icons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot
politician
of the time,
is not a celebrity.
Right. They tend to wind up being that, though, mm-hmm. a lot of the time. They shouldn't be a celebrity. They shouldn't be wrapped up in their fame and fortune, and they shouldn't have all these amazing benefits coming their way. And that's why I think we need term limits, is because if life is good when you're in office, you'll do anything to stay in office, anything, mm-hmm. no matter how corrupt, no matter how terrible. I even see that in the Catholic Church, actually. You know, I'm not saying there should be term limits necessarily in the Catholic Church, but you see these guys like Bishop Dolan in New York, they start going to these cocktail parties with politicians. They love that life. Mm-hmm. They start having drinks with these guys. There's a celebrity. They love it. And all they have to do is really say mass every once in a while. And they make some decisions in their office. But they get to hang out with these people. They probably get some money, let's be honest. And I don't know exactly what they're going to do with that. They'll go to a ball game. They won't spend it on their homes because mm-hmm. they have a vow of poverty.
Yep.
But you see it everywhere. And when you say, hey, you can stay here for as long as you like, you run a lot of risks. People doing anything to stay in no longer is their number one goal to make life better for Americans and the people that they serve, their constituents. but rather it's to stay in office
exactly
and make that money. It's really crazy. So mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent of term limits. What do you think about that?
I'm a term limits guy. I have laid out. I don't have all the stats on me, but I often take part in our college Republicans versus college Democrats debates at ISU, and I was asked that question last year. And I laid out multiple politicians, their net worth when they started office, their net worth when they ended, and how long they stayed in office. Nancy Pelosi being one of the top of how much the difference was between when she began and when she ended. And then I also had done the math on how much Congress people make, and showed that if she had saved every cent that she had from beginning to end, had not spent a single cent of all that she had earned, she'd still be like $1 million short of what her net worth is. Mm. And so the problem with that is, where does this extra $1 million coming from? Well, probably from book deals and probably investments. I mean, we know that her husband has been involved somewhat. I've seen a few different news articles that he was involved in different potential insider trading. And so that's the thing, is it's obvious that these people figure out their position of power. They do everything to keep that power because they can profit off it significantly. And really what they're profiting off of is you and I, Paul. Hmm. Not us personally, but to bring it personally, they're profiting off the American people, and they're profiting off the inability for the American people to really hear that message, the message I'm saying, and the fact that that they are using their position of power not to help us. They're using it to help themselves.
Hmm. So just to say it one more time. Mm-hmm. I know you said it rather clearly, but for some reason I'm forgetting. Say my dad has a stroke and he's in critical condition, and my family and he are below the poverty line.
Yep.
Should the government come in? What should happen exactly? Should we go into debt because we can't afford his surgeries that he needs to keep him alive? Should we be forced to pay that up, whatever it kind of takes, if that's monthly things for the rest of our lives? Should we do that? Should he do that? Or should we rely on churches maybe, or the community to help us? What do you think there?
Yeah.
If you don't think that we should have any government subsidized
healthcare. I mean, there's the pipe dreams of potential localized and everything. I do think that there should be a government social safety net for those that really need it. People in life-threatening conditions, such as having a stroke, that really need it. But there's also this thing, Paul, called the Hippocratic Oath. That if somebody comes into an emergency room, no matter who they are, they have to serve them to the best of their ability. So you could go in already with $200,000 of credit card debt, and they'd have to serve you. Like, technically, yes, you'd be going into further debt. So that's the thing, is that if there genuinely are emergencies, you will get care. You walk into any American hospital, that's how it works. Mm-hmm. I think that once that procedure has taken place, I think that if there should be a process to make sure that the government truly should be stepping in. I don't know. I haven't really thought about every little thing that would go into it, but potential for or how much money they actually have. I don't think the government should be paying. If you are a smoker your entire life, the government shouldn't be paying for your treatment for lung cancer. I don't think they should do that. You made mm-hmm. those decisions. It shouldn't be the burden of the taxpayer to pay for your treatment. I know that might sound a little heartless, but like mm-hmm. live with the decisions that you make and face accountability for and consequences for the actions you took.
Then that gets weird though, because what if the government's saying that you did this, you smoked all your life, no money for you. Sorry, you're in debt, or you die. Something like that. Or they could say, hey, you didn't wear a mask and now you're sick. You didn't get vaccinated and you got COVID. We're not paying for anything. We tried to tell you, you idiot. Now you die.
And this is why I want to get, this is why I advocate for, this is why I would like the government out of it entirely, because the government can pick and choose all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they set the rules, they're going to set them to favor whatever agenda they want. And so that's why I think it'd just be better. That's even just a very simple reason for privatization or localization. Because if we're given the power to say, to the government, I mean, we give the power right now to say who can and can't. Like, here's the thing is, so I don't think I'd qualify for government health care for those that are under the poverty line, not because I make enough, because my parents make a decent amount and they claim me as a dependent. My parents don't give me a monthly allowance or give me a lot. No, I work for to pay my bills, to pay for my groceries. Like, that's all my money. My parents don't give me any of that. But I didn't get stimulus checks. I didn't get I wouldn't qualify for government health care. I don't qualify when I submit my FAFSA for potential financial aid from the government. I don't get any of that because my parents make enough to where the government says, and I'm still claimed as a dependent, to where the government says, no, you don't deserve that. And so that's the thing is, like, technically, if I took my actual income, I would qualify for all that stuff. But it's my parents and dependents. So what I'm saying is that when we already have the government picking and choosing who gets what and how they can get how they can get what. And so I think that but if you look at people as an individual, I know I'm stuttering a little bit here. I'm trying to collect my thoughts. But if you look at people as an individual, their circumstances might not be the same as they are on paper. And so when you have the government picking and choosing everything, it gets real muddy. People don't qualify for certain things that might need it. Like, what if I was estranged from my parents? I'm not. But what if I was, to where, like, I really didn't get along with them? I had a super different life and
you were independent?
Yeah. What if I was independent personally, but they still claimed me as a dependent?
So no stimulus check for you despite you needing it. I don't know what else they would do. Maybe
I wouldn't be able to qualify for that government health care. Wouldn't be like anything. Any of the social safety nets that we have set up wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. The only way I could get out of that is by basically suing the government. Well, not suing my parents to prove that I'm not actually a dependent of them.
Mm-hmm. I see. We're talking about the big issue of health care in America. It's a huge issue. It's hard to wrap our minds around. You're a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the biggest issue, what's the issue that you are most passionate about, I should say, most passionate about that's a social issue here in America? What's the biggest deal on your mind? What keeps you up at night?
Mm. That's a hard one, Paul. There's a lot that keeps me up at night. Mm-hmm. But I'd say probably there's two, and they kind of go together a little bit. Apathy is a big one for me. It really grinds my gears when people just don't care. I'd rather somebody be the furthest left lefty that is all gung-ho for socialism or even a communist. They can claim they're a communist. I'd rather have that than somebody that just doesn't care. That's a big one for me. The second that goes with that a little bit is people that aren't willing to have a conversation. So sure, go identify as a communist if you want. At least you care about something, but you got to be willing to explain why you believe what you believe and talk to me about why I believe what I believe and have an open-minded discussion back and forth, because I'm willing to do that. I've had the guy who claims to be the chairman of the normal communist party. I've talked to him. I've had a conversation with him before. Very open-minded, very interesting. I asked him questions and he answered them. I still didn't agree with him, but I was able to have a conversation with him. And so that's what I expect. That's what is a big issue for me in as a social issue, is that we need people to care about what goes on, about how much they're paying at the pump, about other people and what they believe, and ask the question of why. We need people to care, and we also need to be able to actually have those conversations.
Hmm. There's absolutely no utility in being a numbskull,
yep.
Someone who just doesn't care about the stuff.
Exactly.
You're an idiot then. You're a waster.
Mm-hmm.
I dislike that. I'm not saying you have to keep up on all the news all the time, but you should probably care.
Mm-hmm. And you have a right to your opinion. You have a right to an opinion. Why don't you utilize that right? You're literally granted the right to have it. Why do you not care? Why not you personally, but to the people that exist in the ether that are apathetic. Why? When you're given that opportunity, it's so frustrating to me, because I love having conversations with people that disagree with me. I love it. They challenge my view. There's been times where I find holes in my own arguments and I either need to find a way to fill it or alter my opinion to make sure that I have a sound belief. And there's been times where I can do the same for somebody else. And I love doing that. That can't happen if you don't care or if you are close-minded. So those are the social issues I really care about. That's what I fight for, is the ability for people to talk.
That's right, man. That's what this show is all about. It's the there's so much beauty comes from just having two people that disagree talk to each other respectfully. Mm-hmm. Respectfully, not screaming over each other. You shut up and you listen, even if you think they are an idiot. And so much good can come about, but there's this danger that comes when you keep people separated. You polarize and you say, don't talk to them. Talk to your – they're not your enemies. They're not your freaking enemies. They're not – it's not some foreign nation that wants to kill you. This is not the Taliban we're talking about. These are people of a different way of thinking.
Yeah.
Exchange your ideas. Safe spaces. I think that's horribly –
it's absurd. It's absurd. I'll tell you. So I have to – I do a lot of work with housing at Illinois State University. I'm always – anytime I'm here, guys, I'm talking as myself and not as a member of anything. I'm talking just my own personal opinion, but we had to do I've had to do diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings, right? And so I had one recently, and they give these scenarios of things that could come up on campus. And one was, there was somebody, that said something offensive, and how would you deal with someone who says something offensive, either in a classroom, in a dorm room, across campus, things like that. How would you deal with that? And I'm not even kidding you, Paul. When somebody in this group, that was one of my peers, said that it's so hard because we have free speech, but we have the right to free speech, but we also need to make sure that people are comfortable. Like, we have a right to be comfortable. And
no, you don't.
That's what I said. I'm sorry for yelling, but it really infuriated me because no one has a right to be comfortable. You do not have a right to be comfortable. And so that's what I said to him. I go, show me in the Constitution where your right to be comfortable is. Hell, even go to the Declaration of Independence. Try to show me anywhere where it says we have a right to be comfortable. The closest I could come up with would be the fact that we have a right to pursue happiness. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But that is not a right to comfort. That is a right to seek comfort. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't want to engage in conversation, if somebody says something that might offend you, you can leave. Be welcome to leave. You can do that. And that's what I was trying – that what I said is I was like, so somebody says something offensive, brush it off your shoulder. Or – engage in conversation with them. And like I said earlier, ask them why they think that way, why they said what they said. Try to understand where they're coming from. Or again, seek comfort. But no one has a right to comfort.
Right. And right. So, that's absolutely right. You know, and it's not to say that it's okay and you should expect to be harassed. Harassment is something different.
Different. That's a legal crime. There is a legal definition to harassment.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like things that threaten one's well-being, personal well-being, that they are entitled to, threatens to cause them physical harm, is abusive in some way, shape, or form, blah, 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 blah.
Oftentimes defined as repeated as well.
Yes, right.
It has to be on more than one occasion. That
mm-hmm. And it's perceived as dangerous or inciting violence, yada, 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 things like that. You don't have a right. If I walk into a leftist rally and I'm extremely pro-life, say mm-hmm. I walk into the Women's March and I'm pro-life, should I say I expect to not get any, or I have a right to not be berated about my beliefs?
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Well, and it also conflicts in the idea, Paul. Okay, so there's what if we make all these safe spaces for people that identify as LGBTQ, right?
You forgot the IA. Plus.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever.
Uh-oh.
We make all – I'm just joking. But we make all these safe spaces for them. Okay, well, what if a student comes along that feels uncomfortable with gay people? I have gay friends. I'm totally fine. Be gay. I don't care. Be straight. Be gay. Be whatever you want to be. But if we're going to talk about this right to comfort that this person made up, what if a student comes along that's uncomfortable with something that you believe or that's being pushed by the school? What mm-hmm. what then? It's conflicting then, because then you have one student who is gay and you have another who's uncomfortable with gay people. And I guarantee you the one that is gay will not be comfortable around the homophobe, whatever you want to call them. I hate you throwing around those terms, but it's conflicting. There's no such thing as a right to comfort, because there's no way you can live a life where you're comfortable all the time. Not right. to mention the fact that the freedom of speech was made for speech that makes you uncomfortable. They didn't make the right to say, you have a right to say things that make everybody happy all the time. No, they made the right for the speech you don't like, for somebody to be able to say things that you disagree with.
To bring about the best possible well-being for the majority of citizens, for everyone.
Yeah.
You have to have these difficult conversations. You have to. You have to struggle to get anywhere good. That's just a law. It might as well be the law of gravity, because mm-hmm. it's a law that permeates all of reality. There has to be struggle in order to bring about a better thing. Left to your own devices, when things are maximally easy, you slide down into chaos.
Yeah.
If you don't address problems, you slide into chaos. Look at it in a relationship. If there's a thing that's going on that's not conducive to your relationship, your happiness, your well-being, etc., you're going, and if you don't address it, it's going to get worse and worse, and things are just going to get worse. You have to address it. You have to have a difficult conversation, and it's better to have it now rather than later, because the more you wait, the more this thing grows, the more catastrophic it is when you finally do unpack it. I don't know where I was going with that exactly, but what was I wanting to say there? Basically, yeah, you have no right to comfort.
No, there's no right to comfort. And it's all about being able to have conversation. Again, it goes back. So I guess, I mean, you asked the question earlier, what am I most passionate about? Conversation and free speech. That's really it. Oftentimes you'll hear conservatives say that there's a threat to free speech. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think that there are threats to free speech, but not in the way – oftentimes liberals that I'll talk with about this will be like, well, there's no threat to free speech. No one's putting in bills to say you can't say these things. Well, yes and no. One, I mean, there's a lot of – there's potential legislation across the board regarding like calling somebody the wrong pronouns could be –
In
issues.
Canada, if you're a federally funded person, such as a professor at a university, and you refuse to call someone by their preferred pronouns, you can and have gone to jail.
I have heard of that one. There's been people that have talked about proposing legislation similar in the United States, but it would get struck down by the Supreme Court like that. And so I don't think that there is necessarily a government threat to free speech. I think there are people that are trying to, but I don't really see it as a big issue right now. But I do think there's a societal threat to free speech. And I often hear when, like, because I'll say something that's offensive, somebody be like, well, you shouldn't say that. And I'm like, well, I have a right to free speech. And they'll be like, well, but you're not free from consequences. And they're not wrong. You're not free from the consequences of the things you say. But when the consequences, as they used to be, somebody could get really mad at you. They might want to start a fight, which if they wanted to start a fight, then that would be illegal in terms of assault. But those used to be the consequences. It would just be like, oh, I'm really angry at you in this moment. Nowadays, with the use of social media, your consequences could be, and have been for many, you have like that 1 minute video clip shared about you, and then you have everybody hating on you on the internet. You could have your address. You could have your full name sent out to millions of people, plastered across everywhere across the internet so that everybody could see. You could go trending. You could become trending. You could be the kind of person who just kind of keeps your head down most of the time. One time said something that made somebody mad, mm-hmm. and you could be trending and everybody's hating on you. Your entire well-being could be threatened if you say something nowadays that goes. So we don't necessarily have a governmental threat to free speech, but we have a societal threat to free speech with the way people treat each other. And that goes back into the cancel culture that we talked about earlier. And that's why I think it just so matters so much. It all really ties together because that's why it matters so much that people talk to each other and people ask those questions of why. Because I think that if we all practice a little bit more empathy and understanding, we as a society could move away from hate people because they think differently than me.
Right. And in practicing empathy and understanding, I would also throw in their curiosity and a desire to understand why someone else thinks the way they think. Assume that someone else might know something that you don't. And in that, you want to learn from them. That was like an Abraham Lincoln quote, I think. And also you talk about, you could say one small thing. You could say it 10 years ago, and it could come up. Look at Kevin Hart. He couldn't host the Oscars or the Grammys. I don't know. I don't really care.
It was the Oscars. But it was his lifelong dream. Dave Chappelle talked about it.
It was a lifelong dream.
It was his lifelong dream to host the Oscars, and it was like a big goal for him in his career after he actually started making it. And he had made one tweet, which I actually thought was kind of like
– it was like, I won't spank my kids. I'll just put them in Crocs and send them to school and let the other kids take care of
them. Maybe that one, but there was the other one. The one that I thought got him canceled, it was like, if my son turns out to be gay, I'm going to hit him over the head with a dollhouse, which is obviously a joke. Kind of funny. I laughed the first time I heard it.
Am I missing something?
Because I think it was the idea of like, oh, well – because – I mean, this was over 10 years ago now. So it was when stereotypes were like, especially of gays, were used a lot more in comedy of it. And so it was like, oh, well, a gay kid would play with dolls over like over action figures or whatever. Like, so I think that was the joke he was trying to make. And I was just like, oh, like, it's you're right, though. I mean, he suffered not being able to complete his lifelong dream because of keyboard warriors on their little phones.
But also pathetic weasels of company owners, whoever hosts the Grammys, you know, they're like, oh, everyone's freaking out. So, and they have to do what they got to do for ratings, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I bet if they didn't cater to those people and do what they wanted, maybe they'd have gotten more views, because we all know those award shows are kind of going down.
No, 100%. And I think that's kind of a risk versus reward thing that companies are playing right now. I think they go woke a lot because they think that it'll appease. I think that sometimes it's not even necessarily for the potential ratings or anything. I think it's more to because they don't want to face the negative attention. Mm. They don't want to have to even deal. Like, it's easier just to be like, okay, well, we're not, because then everybody would be like, oh, yay, fine. Like, it's fine. And yeah, they might not get the ratings, but they don't have to face the negative attention. But there are some times where it's like quite obviously performative. I mean, when for Pride Month, they all put their logos in rainbow it's performative. What are they actually, like, they're not actually doing anything. They don't care. They're just doing it to say, hey, yeah, we still want your business, even if you're gay. Like, that's basically what they're doing at that one. There was also the big thing that came out, and I thought it was really funny, actually. I think it's, in a really dark way, it's funny, is there was a few different companies, Dick's Sporting Goods being one of them, that offered, once Roe v. Wade was overturned, to pay for abortions
and
travel expenses for employees to get abortions. And I thought it was really darkly funny because there was all these, like, feminists and pro-choice people being like, yay, look, they're doing something great for women's rights. And I was like sitting in the back and I was just laughing to myself. I was like, you don't realize they're going to save a lot of money by paying for those travel expenses, because now they don't have to pay for 9 months of maternity leave. Mm-hmm. They don't care about women's rights. They care about the bottom line. So they're fine killing the baby because it'll help with the bottom line.
Oh, you think? I thought you were going to say there's some irony in feminists saying that they love dicks or something like that. But I was wrong.
That as well. That
yours
as well.
Is much more mature and interesting. No, that's all very fascinating, man. And Kevin, we'll have to cut this one short here, but we'll have to have you on again. Maybe I'll do a live episode and we'll take calls.
Yeah.
Just like you were doing upstairs. Like I said, I'm learning a lot from you.
I'd love it, man. I'd love it, man. Everybody, if you want to hear more, I know we were kind of all over the place today. Mm. A lot of times I try to – I love it, because that's what we talked about on my show, is that it can be more of a spontaneous conversation because you don't necessarily have a drastic time limit. But if you guys want to hear any of my show, check out Speechless on cities92.9.com, or go to Spotify. Check out – you can search the same thing, Speechless, Spotify, iHeartRadio, pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts, except for Apple Podcasts. I have been having trouble with that one. I might have to have Paul help me out with that.
They're far left. You know what? I'll try to help you all I can. Sometimes they decline stuff because I don't know.
But I really appreciate it. And honestly, leave comments and everything. I want to see what people have to say.
Do you think we're toxic? Do you think it's a horrible conversation? Do you agree with some stuff? Come on, conservatives. A lot of time you guys are pretty scared to comment anything, I've found. Whereas the liberals are like, "Lay, you suck. You know,
I'm such an awful person."
Yeah. But hey, you know what? I want to have more liberal people on the show as well. I, of course, lean conservative. There's some liberal things. That's social safety net. That's a democratic type of thing. That's a leftist idea. A lot of conservatives won't like that. You, Kevin, and affairs were all about that, but
I'm all about trying it. I want to be clear there.
Right.
I'd be interested to see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, please, everyone, leave a comment. Tell us what you think of all this. Tell us where you disagree. Maybe we can have a fruitful discussion down in the comment section. Maybe. A lot of times I don't respond to those, especially if they're on YouTube. They tend to get a little crazy.
Yeah.
Like with Kat Peterson, your coworker.
I'm sure.
But anyway, thank you everyone so much for listening to and watching The Paul Garcia Show. That was Kevin Fares, host of Speechless on Cities 92.9. Kevin, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you again.
Thank you, Paul. I'd be happy to be back anytime.
Let's do it. We'll do a live one. One of these days. And you'll have we'll have you call in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is one of the first episodes I've done with absolutely no notes or anything. So hey, we're
gonna
wrap this up. We've been lingering for a long time.
I know.
I'm gonna stop the video now and cut.